my name is Johnny Gartner, and thank you so much for joining me for this week's episode of the Cedar 60 podcast. At Cedar 60, our mission is to engage with culture and politics from the distinctive lens of the gospel. And today, I am joined by two very special guests, Dr. F. Eric Brooks and Dr. Kevin Jones, to discuss their new book, Jesse Owens, A Life in American History. Dr. Brooks, Dr. Jones, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us, brother. Appreciate being here.
Yeah, well, we really appreciate you guys coming on. If you could briefly introduce yourselves to our audience, that way we can kind of get to know both of you, so we can kind of jump right into the conversation.
Hey, my name is Eric Brooks. I'm originally from Montgomery, Alabama, and I'm the provost and vice president for academic affairs at Central State University.
And I am Kevin Jones, and I guess since we're saying where we're from, I didn't know we were doing that. I am from Louisville, Kentucky, the home of the Louisville Lip, Mr. Muhammad Ali. Maybe our next book can be on Ali. And now serve as the dean of the School of Education at Cedarville University.
Cool. Well, this book is part of a series called Black History Lives, published, by the ABC CLIO. So if you could talk a little bit about the book, about the series, kind of how it came to be as part of the series, how this series came to be, that would be great.
Okay. ABC CLIO is a conglomerate publishing company. They publish many, many books. They have many other subsidiaries under them. And so they wanted to produce books to sort of teach high school and for a general audience about some of the known heroes and then some of the heroes that we didn't know from black history. Mm-hmm. We know that many times black history is left out of the annals of general telling of history. And so they just wanted to be inclusive and be able to include some of those heroes and sheroes through this book series.
And so this Jesse Owens book, co-authored by the both of you, if you could talk a little bit about how you two arrived on this project.
Initially, I had a list of people that we could write about. I have a long-standing history with this publishing company. Uh-huh. And we were both employed at Kentucky State University in Frankfort, Kentucky. And I met Brother Jones. We worked in the same building. Mm-hmm. He was on the first floor. I was on the second floor. We would just catch each other in the hall and those kinds of things. And I thought that he's when you know something about someone, you see something in them, you're like, okay, this guy might be okay to be friendly with. And one day, I got the idea about the Jesse Owens. I knew that he was a former track athlete, collegiate athlete. And I was like, I wonder if Jones would want to write about Jesse Owens. And I'll let him pick up the story there.
Well, I think one of the beauties of us, quickly becoming brothers is that we were already brothers in Christ. Mm. And I think what he sensed in me and what I sensed in him was the power of the Spirit, right?
Yeah.
A little pre-interview talk. Yeah, the question was, Johnny asked Dr. Brooks what he was teaching. He's like, hey, I'm only teaching Wednesday night Bible study. So he's not currently teaching any classes at Central State for the listeners out there. But I think, the power of the Spirit resonates, and I sense the same trustworthiness in him. You know a brother when you know a brother in Christ. And so now, long story short, I would often go visit his office just to talk, gain some wisdom from Dr. Brooks on whatever was going on in my own office space. He's been an administrator a lot longer than I have. And I walk into his office one day, and he's just sitting, and he looks up. He's like, hey, what's up, Jones? And I'm like, hey, what's up, Doc? And he's like, you want to write a book on Jesse Owens? And I'm like, sure. Like, why not? I love history, and immediately he said he had already made the connection.
Yeah.
About my track and field time at Kentucky State University, and as well as spending some time studying the Holocaust, and maybe we'll talk more about that.
Yeah.
But the book came as an idea from Dr. Brooks, just being gracious enough to bring me along in this process. So I'm thankful for him.
I'm going to make a quick plug for Cedarville here. One of my favorite things about being at Cedarville is being able to walk into a professor's office and talk about issues and just talk about life. And it, to me, it sounds like this is kind of the relationship you guys had. And it's kind of what our vision is for this podcast, is for people to listen in to conversations, talking about the issues that are plaguing us and how we can approach them from a biblical perspective. So in that vein, let's just open the floor for discussion kind of about who Jesse Owens was, how you guys started researching this project, and kind of the person that emerged that is in this book.
Okay. Well, I'm originally from Alabama, and I discovered that Jesse Owens was born in Alabama in a little small town, Danville. Mm. And so that really kind of struck me. And, you know, it's ironic that we both end up in Ohio because
that's the Lord working.
Yeah.
Right? That's the Lord working. I mean, he does what he does.
Yeah, he moved as a kid to Cleveland. And so we both have this, we're all affiliated now by this state, the state bonds and all of those kinds of things. But I started out about just looking at his early life. Mm. I'll admit I knew some about Jesse Owens, in particular because people focus on the Olympics and the triumph at the Olympics. Early life, I knew just a little bit about it. I didn't even watch the movie that came out a few years ago, but it really didn't talk about his early life. So for me, that drew me in. I was like, okay, what was his life about? You know, and maybe when I, you know, look and study his early life, I learn more about the history of Alabama, which I did. And so we sort of just laid the book out in chapters, and we divided the chapters up. Mm-hmm. And he took half, and I took half.
it was a little bit of a tussle. Like, which ones? What do we want to write? What do we want to do?
It's a classic group project.
Yeah. And that's exactly, you know, you learn so many things when you're in undergrad and you're in groups, and this book is no different. Mm-hmm. And so we divided them up, and then after that, we just sort of gotten together and blended it all to give it one voice. Those kinds of things, and it was, you know, it's chronological. We followed through it. Chronologically. And so the first place I went was that museum, the Jesse Owens Museum in Danville. And it's really funny to me because he has a funny story about his time in Alabama, and the weather in Alabama can be very fickle, and Kevin found that out while he was there. So I want Kevin him to tell the story about him visiting the Jesse Owens Museum.
Oh, I didn't visit; it was a trial. So Dr. Brooks and I think one of the things, you know, what drew me to this project, excuse me, outside of just, you know, Dr. Brooks' graciousness and saying, "Hey, come write with me." Well, also my time at Kentucky State University, going to an historically black college, we were introduced to historical figures just as a natural part of the fabric of what we did as students. So we had convocation, which was somewhat like our chapel, but not Christ-centered and God-exalting as much as our preaching moments are. But on Tuesday and Thursdays at the 11 o'clock hour, we had time to sit and learn about historical figures. And so Jesse Owens is just one of those voices that you just kind of heard some of. Another thing that drew me to this project was in 2006, I was a grad school student at the University of Kentucky and studied there the Holocaust, the March of Hope and Remembrance. So it was a 2-hour class and just spent some time reading through the material and studying that, and then seeing how big Jesse Owens was in the 36 Olympics, right? And just how big his footprint was and how people perceived him, both black and white and even globally, you know, before the Olympics and then after the Olympics. And it's kind of, he had a mixed reception. You'll see that in the books. I don't want to paint the picture like it was all good for Jesse. And we get that. I think once we get to like chapters 6 and on in the book. So Dr. Brooks and I, we were chatting about, we tried to coordinate several times. He's busy. I was busy. We tried to get to Alabama together. I wish I would have went with him because then the story wouldn't have happened. But long story short, we traveled, me and my family, we traveled down, and I'm just kind of walking through the life of Jesse. And long story short, driving down a road headed to the museum, and the clouds get dark, and I'm like, man, the weather's not looking so good. lo and behold, a couple of weeks before, there have been some major tornadoes in Alabama that I think like more than 20 people lost their life.
Oh my.
More than 125 or 150 were injured during this tornado. And so people were on high alert. Mm. Long story short, we're driving. I get to the museum. I call the receptionist that we had coordinated with. Like, we had been talking about, she had been sending us materials, sending us books, being a kind friend. And I call and I say, hey, you know, where are you? And she said, oh my gosh, Kevin, I'm home. There's a tornado coming. I'm like, no way. And so she is giving me directions to a tornado shelter.
Oh my gosh.
I'm in the middle of Oakville, Danville, Alabama. I have no idea where I'm at. She's trying to give me directions. Man, some little kids are playing in the park close to where Jesse, where the museum is. They they run up to our vehicle, knock on the door and say, can you give us a ride home? Oh so if you're the kid that knocked on a stranger's door and you ever hear this and I'm the guy that gave you a ride, hey, please reach out to me. Because I really want to meet you and your friends. They're like, can you give us a ride home? And my wife and I, we throw our kids in the front of this little sedan. I really don't remember if it was three or four kids or young men. I just don't. It was happened that fast. Mm, wow. They give us directions to their house. We drop them off at their house. The receptionist is on the phone like, what are you doing? She's like, what are you doing? I'm like, I'm taking kids home. And, you know, Lord, we finally make it to the tornado shelter. Uh-huh. Several tornadoes touch down.
Oh
my family and I are in the tornado shelter for 4 hours, and I literally never make it to the museum. I call him on my way home. He doesn't answer for me to explain him everything. But I think we get in contact the next day. And I'm like, dude, I almost died. Tried to write this book on Jesse Owens. It better be a good one. So
that, well, that's I can confirm story. It was a good book. So
okay,
there you go.
That's good. Sweet.
So obviously a lot of work and research goes into writing a book. So maybe if you could give us a little insight into that, but also talk about maybe some of the things you learned about Jesse Owens that surprised you. You've already talked, you know, a little bit about that, and maybe some of the things that were your favorite that you learned about him.
Well, I tell you, it is a lot easier now to write books. I was telling you about one of my professors from my PhD program who was lamenting one day when we were in class about how easy it is for us to do research because we could sit in a classroom and go to Israel and Germany to those libraries, you know, easily. So it was not as difficult as the old days because there's a lot of information out there. But I spent a lot of time at the museum in Alabama. Spent a lot of time searching the archives at Ohio State, and those are online as well. And then the Blazer Library at Kentucky State University, those librarians were phenomenal. You could the school was shut down for COVID at the time, and I would call them and say, hey, look, I need this book on Jesse Owens, and they would go and get it for me because, you know, that's how willing they were to help us. So, and then it was just sort of blending a lot of the things. There's a lot of folklore and, you know, some untruths surrounding Jesse's life. And so it was, kind of tedious sorting through all of those things, checking and those kinds of things. But I thoroughly enjoyed writing this particular book. So I'm a big sports fan. And so to be able to combine sort of my study of African-American history and sports and politics and all of it was just fantastic for me. And then, we looked at various magazines. I'm not one of those people like, oh, it's got to be a peer-reviewed journal to include in the work. I will take information from popular magazines, books, newspapers were they were very good. And what we tried to do in this book is to take Jesse Owens' life and then sort of overlay it with what was going on in America at that time. And put it into context. So so if you read through this, you will definitely see that.
Mm-hmm. Good. Yeah, I think probably just to echo, I won't repeat anything you said, but I think one of the greatest joys I had was like looking at old video footage of Jesse, right? So I echo everything Dr. Brooks has said, but like trying to be a former track and field athlete and then realizing I was not going to make it to the Olympics and then watching Jesse Owens run is like, he had it.
Yeah.
Right. So even when you look at his posture, running and some of the old footage that's out there is absolutely amazing. So I found great joy in analyzing his running style and then seeing how that coincided with what the news anchors and even his coaches were saying about him. I found that really, really, really fun. A few other things that I found interesting through this process were like listening and reading the articles and interviews. You know, so it's funny. We did a sound check. You know, if you do podcasts and things like that, you do a sound check. But like watching him like post Olympics, and people like feeding him the scripts that they needed him to say because of politics and his ethnicity and what Adolf Hitler was doing. It's kind of like no. Retake. We need you to do this. And some news anchors actually captured those moments before. Like they went quote unquote live for him to do. So like watching him do that was phenomenal. Like watching him in his older life and listening to him articulate his vision of life and Christ, like post the Olympics, like when he's in his, you know, 40s and 50s, and seeing him still serve and teach children and young men and women, you know, the running and life was good for me to see. One of the things you ask, one of the most interesting things I found was just his hard work and his grit and his determination, right? So it's like, oh yeah, Jesse was a great natural athlete, but he was a, no pun intended here, a workhorse. Yeah. You'll see why I say, he worked hard. He had grit, man. Yeah. And seeing some of the things he came through as a child would just blow your mind. Yeah. And even if you read some of the stories about him being, like his mom doing some quick surgery on him, it would blow your mind if you're not a believer. It's like, there's no way that happened. And then through the eyes of Christ and, you know, some of the things we've seen in Scripture, the way God has preserved us, it's like, that absolutely could happen. So those are a few of the things. One of my, I think one of the things that was exciting is just talking to my own children about the book. Had an opportunity to lecture here at Cedarville about the book a couple of weeks ago. And I was like, are y'all coming? They was like, no, we know everything there is to know. They're like, no, we know everything there's to know about Jesse Owens. And that's true, because as I'm reading and I'm just telling, hey, did y'all know this? And it'd just be like, Jesse Owens was dinner table talk for years around my table as I read and was engulfed in the life of Jesse and even the depravity of the way that Hitler kind of carried out a lot of what he was promising before and after the Olympics. So, those are my quick takeaways, Johnny.
Well, I really appreciate it. You mentioned how this book overlays a lot of what's happening in America, even in the world, you know, as his life unfolds, talking about from failure of Reconstruction in the South, they moved to Ohio, all that's happening during his lifetime, even until he dies. One of the things you just said, Dr. Jones, talking about, you know, the natural ability, but, you know, one of the things that you guys talked about in the book was how oftentimes African-American athletes get you know, their talent attributed to their ethnicity, and you really highlight the fact that he was naturally athletic, but he also had put a lot of work and determination and effort at personal cost into his skill, and so that was something that I really loved reading in the book.
That's good.
If you could talk a little bit about kind of a brief biographical of Jesse Owens as a person without spoiling the book, kind of just talking about, I know that's the whole point of the book, so we won't try and go, but just, you know, I think one of the things that the book talks about is that he was controversial in the civil rights movement, had some controversial opinions in that. So if you've already mentioned, you know, had a hard childhood. So if you kind of talk about from the Olympics onward about, you know, kind of the life of Jesse Owens and kind of the legacy that he left.
Yeah, it was very difficult for him. After the Olympics, he was basically banished from the Olympic scene, or those post-celebratory track meets. He was banned as an athlete by Avery Brundage. He struggled to find employment. And so, you know, that raises the question, is this the way that we treat an American hero? Yeah. And so he had a lot of struggles post Olympics. And he failed. He failed. He tried to open a sporting goods store business. He wanted to do a meat packing business.
Laundry.
Dry cleaning. Yeah. He became a spokesman for several products. But it was difficult for him. And I think at a little... at some point it gnawed at him a little, you know, that he could not, he represented the country well. I think it gnawed at him just a little bit. He thought it was going to be different once he arrived back, but you know, he even tried to start Ohio State again to finish up his degree, and didn't do that. So it was difficult. I think by the time he got to the end of his life, he was somewhat content when he moved to Arizona. I think he was somewhat content, but you know, it was very difficult. It's not the way that you, it's not the storybook ending that we thought it would be.
I think one of the things that surprised me most at the end of the book was, restless might be the word that I used, that he seemed after he left the Olympics, and how that didn't really seem to fade, even once he, you know, was in the later stages of life.
So I agree with you. Wholeheartedly.
Y'all echo that he was complicated, and his life was complicated, and it we can't sum it up in 40 seconds, right? You know, so it was complicated, the life that he lived, and the life that he struggled to live. And so Dr. Brooks has mentioned all the adversities that he faced, the complications of his life, the slight from the White House, the slight from being able to sign on to whatever company he could have endorsed, the slight from not being able to finish up at OSU. Now, they did honor him. I want to be charitable. They did honor him later on, and his children were able to see some of that. But what I appreciate is his humility and his grace. I'm not sure how many people outrun Hitler, make a mockery of sorts of a man's philosophical beliefs as relates to race, and then still can, with a high chin, like walk around and be proud and not be malicious towards others. Right? That's why I see his Christ-likeness come, because I think the natural man would want to speak ill of his or her country, or speak ill of a particular organization. We see it all the time, organization, or speak ill of a university. But he didn't. He didn't. I mean, he had to be hurt, right? I mean, we read through the lines of what he said, and thus, like, say, Dr. Brooks, the difficulty and kind of like what was the tone in invitation? Yeah. That's why I like listening to his voice. He was so gentle. But I'm not sure how many people would handle the adversity the way that he handled adversity. And maybe that's the upbringing, being, I don't want to give away his whole childhood, but maybe that's a part of his upbringing, and then being filled with the Spirit of God and able to do that.
Spoiler alert from the book, you kind of hinted it at earlier, but after he left the Olympics, he had to race against horses to be able to, you know, support his family and his children. And it's just, it's almost shocking to think that, you know, this, and we think about the World Wars, African Americans coming home from World Wars and the way they were treated in America. And it's just that same kind of mentality that this book really addresses and kind of gives you a vision into how it would feel to be like that kind of person and how it affects your life.
Yeah, that is true. That is true.
If you could briefly talk about his views on civil rights, you know, again, briefly is
complicated.
A complicated word when it comes to history and biographies, and of course it's addressed more in the book, but just, you know, to pique the interest of the listeners.
Yeah, so, like, so he, man, it's complicated.
Yeah.
And I'll say that again. We talk about the complicity, how complicated it was for him. So in one sense, I think many African Americans would have been, no, they were, not would have been, it's documented. You're shaking your head like, oh, they were. they were frustrated at Jesse for a few reasons, at James Cleveland for a few reasons. One, many of them would have hoped he went to a historically black college and raised there. So like the friction started pretty early on in Jesse's career. Like, what, you're going to Ohio State? You're considering Michigan? Like, you should go to, you're from Alabama, you should go to an historically black college and represent what they would say, represent the race there, the African-American race there. So like that was difficult for him to navigate and manage that. Then you couple that with the complications of coming home and then not being honored from a majority culture that I think he fought to serve and to represent well. Mm. So I think there were pushes from both minorities, from his own family members and friends saying, hey, you need to, for lack of better words, you need to represent us better. And then I think there was also an ostracizing or being a put off from the majority culture saying, eh, you're really not good enough to be involved with us either. Mm. So here's this man who has kind of like not follow the direction and advice of many of his African-American family members, his friends. They were saying, hey, they're just going to use you. And then only to maybe have the feeling that he was used when he wasn't rightly honored. So hopefully that's a quick summary of his life as relates. So he would have probably not echoed, we say, some of this, the sentiments and some of the words of like Malcolm X and some of those people who were speaking during the civil rights movements. He would have fallen more in line with a this is just Christ-likeness. Let's not use violence. Yeah. Martin Luther King, let's not use violence to get our point across. So you'll see some of that in the books. I'm trying to talk about it without giving it away.
This is a good sort of reference point or illustration. One year he wrote a book called Black Think. Mm-hmm. And that was it was a very conservative book, basically saying, you know, African Americans have the opportunity to pull themselves up out of bootstraps and those kinds of things, and or should pull themselves up. And then the next year, he got so criticized by the African American community that he wrote another book called I've Changed. So it's very complicated. But we see that, and I always say this, it shows that how man can evolve on issues. Mm. You know, often we talk about Malcolm X, how he had one view before he went to Mecca, and then when he came back from Mecca, he had a different view. It was more widespread. Mm-hmm. And I just say that to say this, that, you know, man can change. Yeah. Man can evolve over time. Yeah. And oftentimes, we don't allow people to evolve.
Yeah, it's good, Doc.
Yeah. It's good. I think that is very helpful in kind of contextualizing the chapters that you kind of discussed that point of his life in the book. So the kind of as we wrap up the discussion here, I think one of the things that students of history in general will know is that we're still kind of living in a very distant shadow of the failure of Reconstruction in the South in, you know, the late 1800s. So if you could talk to us just a little quickly about how we as Christians can look at the life of Jesse Owens and say, how can we respond, you know, in today's culture where this issue still hasn't been put to rest, and, you know, look at how he responded and, you know, what we can respond with as well.
I think we have to be less judgmental. And we have to look at an individual and know that this person, the way they are now, they may evolve and not be that way over time.
Yeah.
I think that's one of the things that we really have to do. And then I think we have to show a deal of courage.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. A deal of courage when we know that people are not saying around the right things and those kinds of things. We have to challenge them.
Yeah.
We have to challenge them. And we have to challenge them through a Christ-like approach. I mean, the only time I can really see Christ being mad is when he turned over the tables in the temple.
Yeah. His righteous anger.
His righteous anger. And I'm saying if we kind of focus on that, we will be great. And then I was thinking about this before we started.
Yeah.
I look at Jesse Owens' life as a part of that Christian race that we look at. And we ought to see that it is not a sprint. Mm-hmm. He's a fantastic sprinter. Jesse was a great sprinter. Mm-hmm. But life is not a sprint. Yeah. This Christian walk is not a sprint. It is a marathon.
That's good.
And that's what we should focus on.
Yeah. And I'll echo a couple of things, Dr. Brooks. That's, you know, 1 Corinthians 9:24-25. hey, we run races. And I will also say, like, in his later life, you talking about how do we, as Christians, make sense of this? I think we model Jesse's service, right? We're reminded in several of the Old Testament prophets and even in New Testament as well, too, to take care of the fatherless. Mm. Like Jesse made it a point to be, you know, to hang out in community centers and to support, take care of the motherless, to be gentle, to show kindness, and to show mercy are all Christian attributes, right, that we should exude and that we should live out. I think Jesse, I think he did that. He did that in his, as far as we've read and studied, in his private life, as well as in his public life, he showed mercy and kindness. And I would encourage believers to do that.
Well, I want to thank both of you so much for coming on. This has been a really, really fascinating discussion. I'll have a couple things to say before we end, but we like to give our guests the last 60 seconds of each episode to kind of say whatever on their heart, whatever they're thinking, you know, anything that we didn't get to talk about in your work on the book. So each of you have a chance to say something. You can you go for first. It as you wish.
We get 30 seconds, or do we get 60 seconds?
Let's go with 60 seconds each. It's not a very hard, fast time.
I'm just aiming for clarity. I guess I'm eating my time up right
now. At 60 seconds, I will cut you off, and you will not be able to go. No, I'm just kidding. So, yeah.
Oh, man. Hey, so I'll say this, and it's not direct. It's not any. I guess it's sort of directly connected to the book, but I would say, hey, remember that Jesus Christ is the way, the truth, and the life, and that no man comes or gets to the Father except through Jesus Christ, right? I think Jesse was trying to live a life that represented Jesus Christ, that would make his Father proud. He did not live a sinless life. But I think, hey, if you're a listener out there and you're running your own race right now, remember that this life ends for us. No man can escape death, and I pray that you are currently running to Christ in such a way that you won't be disqualified. Yeah. So,
well, what immediately popped to my mind is Hebrews 11. Mm. You know, faith is the substance of things hoped for, evidence of things not seen, and that's been on my heart quite a bit lately, because I know that there's so many people dealing with so many different things, but if we could just have faith, the size of a mustard seed, we can move mountains.
Well, thank you so much for coming on today. This has been a really fascinating discussion. For our listeners, we do have an opportunity to win a copy of Dr. Brooks and Dr. Jones' book, a signed copy, I might add. So there will be more details coming out on that in the description of the podcast. Dr. Jones, Dr. Brooks, thanks so much for coming on today.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for listening to this week's episode of the Cedar 60 podcast. We hope you'll make sure to subscribe on all major platforms, follow us on social media, and make sure to join us next time as we continue to explore politics from the distinctive lens of the gospel.